Space Generation, The New Frontier. Tomorrow's Space Economy Today.
And that's the thing, right? Say scouting and you picture a drone over a ridge. What we're actually doing is inferring the geology of a whole continent from a single flickering pixel a million miles off.
Right. It's detective work at absurd scale. Not snapshots of a blue-green marble. Just a star dimming for a heartbeat, and then brightening again.
The transit method in one line. A minuscule dip as a planet crosses its star. For years, that was enough to say, something's there. Maybe estimate size and stop.
But now we read the starlight during that dip. What changes as it slices through a planet's air?
Yeah. What gets filtered? What's swallowed? That spectrum is a chemical fingerprint burned into the light.
So when that fingerprint pops up, what makes a control room sit up?
Oxygen in quantity is the classic one. On Earth, photosynthesis pumps it out, so people latch onto it.
How come?
Non-biological routes can make a little O2, UV-splitting water, for example. So a faint trace isn't enough. You want abundance and companions that shouldn't peacefully coexist, like methane, unless something keeps replenishing them.
So, we're looking for a chemical mismatch, an atmosphere that feels actively maintained.
That's the dream. But even before life talk, we try to sort basics. Clear sky or cloud deck? That paper we were reading shows we can tell. And even that says a lot.
Wild that we can tell if a planet 50 light years away is having a cloudy day.
And that choice, clear versus hazy, drives temperature. Whether surface water could last, first bricks in a real off-world weather report.
Note to self. I wrote weather report for another world in my notes, and it sounded like a joke.
Same. And the thought I keep biting back is this. Maybe the friendliest real estate out there isn't a planet at all.
Exomoons.
Exactly. Moons. Picture a gas giant in the habitable zone, totally hostile itself, but with a Mars or Earth-sized moon, wrapped in air and ocean, warmed by the star and by tides from the giant.
That possibility blows the doors open and makes detection messy. We're barely catching the planet's dip. Now we're supposed to fish out an even smaller wobble from its moon.
Barely. There are candidates. Kepler 1625b is the famous one. But confirmation is brutal. The signal sits right on the noise floor. Still, pieces line up. There are reports of sodium around some hot Jupiters. One idea is that it's getting bled off by a volcanically active Io-like moon.
So we might spot a moon's fingerprints before we ever catch the moon.
Could be. Which means those early gas giants we shrugged off as useless? We probably need to circle back and scrutinize them far more closely.
There's something almost poetic about that. You don't see the creature, you find the tracks it left through the system.
And it forces a strategy shift. We've chased lonely Earth-sized worlds around small stars. The galaxy might be full of grand families instead. A giant with rings dominating the sky over several potentially habitable moons. Imagine growing up under that horizon.
From a storyteller's brain, that image wrecks me. In a good way. A ringed colossus where our moon sits changes mythology, calendars, everything.
It also changes the hazards. A giant like that carries a monster magnetic field and fierce radiation belts.
So you get the jaw-drop view and a radiation bath unless you place the moon just right.
Exactly. Too close, it's sterilized. Too far, you lose tidal heating. Another Goldilocks layer. Not too hot, not too cold, not too irradiated.
So chemistry isn't enough. You need a shield.
Yep, a magnetosphere, which is why the next frontier is measuring planetary magnetic fields.
How do you even sense a field from dozens of light years away? That sounds tougher than nabbing a moon.
Trick is to look, or really, listen, for auroras. If a planet has air and a magnetic field, charged particles can spark polar lights that also emit radio. With the right radio telescopes, you try to catch that glow as a crackling broadcast.
So we stop looking and start listening.
Pretty much. Close-in hot Jupiters are prime because the stellar wind slams into their fields. Should be loud in radio terms.
If we were drawing up a shortlist for places humans could last on the surface, is a strong field basically non-negotiable?
For anything long-term, close to it, without a magnetosphere, the stellar wind sandblasts the air over millions of years. Think Mars. Life would hide underground or underwater.
And the engine for that shield is a molten, spinning core, like Earth's.
Right. You need that internal dynamo. So the world can't be a cold, inert rock. It has to be geologically awake, with plates moving, heat flowing, a heart that beats.
Which means we're not just hunting a location, we're hunting a living system, inside out.
That's the picture emerging. Tectonics to steady climate, a liquid core to power the shield, an atmosphere to tie it together. Interlocking parts we're finally learning to spot from far away.
A living engine. That phrasing flips the search for me. Not right temperature plus water, but is the planet alive in a geologic sense?
It has to be. All those pieces, air mix, possible moons, magnetic cover, say habitability isn't a checkbox. It bubbles up from the whole system.
Which makes the quest feel heavier. After all that, do you end up more or less optimistic about finding a real second Earth?
Both. The more we learn, the more singular Earth looks, and the bigger the haystack gets.
Rare Earth idea versus the mediocrity principle.
Right. Is our setup a one in a trillion fluke? Or do you roll the dice so many times that winners are inevitable? My gut says the numbers help us.
Convince me.
Even if only one-tenth of 1% of rocky worlds in the habitable zone also tick the molten core, plate tectonics, right chemistry boxes, you're still staring at millions of candidates in the Milky Way.
So, complexity gets balanced by sheer quantity. Hopeful, without being dreamy.
And the misses matter. Every world that should have worked, but didn't, is a gift.
Give me an example.
A planet that looked habitable, but lost its air without a magnetic shield? That nails a theory down. A runaway greenhouse like Venus maps climate tipping points. None of those are failures. They're the control cases in our galaxy-wide experiment.
The control set, right. Habitable or not, each one sharpens the model for how worlds function, including ours. It stops being find a spare home and becomes understand the idea of home.
Exactly. Cosmic comparative planetology. Chart the full range of what a world can be.
Feels like a good place to land. From flickering pixels to living interiors, this stretched my brain in the best way.
Same here. Makes me feel tiny and somehow more connected.
I keep wanting to thank the scientists, engineers, and the dreamers pushing this forward. And honestly, the folks who keep tuning into conversations like this, their curiosity fuels the work.
Hear, hear. Let's pick this up again soon. And between now and then, keep looking up.